On 88.1, I'm Tom Hall. This is Maryland Morning. Congressman Elijah Cummings joins me this morning to talk about President Obama's executive actions to address the scourge of gun violence and what Congress may do to support or oppose those efforts. Also, the barriers that former inmates face when they're released from prison are substantial. What can be done to make reentry after incarceration succeed? Plus, that gadget you got for Christmas is so last year. Tech writer Mark Saltzman joins us from Las Vegas on this first day of the annual Consumer Electronics Show with a preview of the next things we'll soon be unable to live without. And Crakeys are back. It's an old-school form of storytelling that's being adopted by some decidedly new-school artists, including WIPR's Aaron Henkin, who's cranking up a new take on Out of the Blocks. I'll talk to Aaron and to the women behind the third annual Baltimore Cranky Fest. Put the environment in focus, too. First, the news.
I'm producer Kathleen Cahill. To catch the news, you'll need to listen to us live on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings at 9 o'clock on 88.1 FM in Baltimore and Frederick, and 106.9 in Ocean City, and streaming online at wypr.org/listen. Now, on with the show.
Thanks, Nathan. Good morning, everybody. On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. We are expecting to hear very shortly from Congressman Elijah Cummings, who we're hoping will be calling in to discuss a variety of things this morning. We want to ask him about his reaction to President Obama's executive actions yesterday announced in the White House. He's going to issue a number of executive actions concerning guns and gun control. Congressman Cummings is one of the big proponents in Congress of strengthening gun control laws, particularly background checks. He's worked very hard on that in particular, and this was a focus of President Obama's remarks yesterday with his executive actions. I also want to talk to the congressman about a documentary film that he's going to be screening at the Capitol tomorrow night. He's doing this in conjunction with Representative Jim Sensenbrenner from Wisconsin. He's a Republican congressman from Wisconsin. It's a film called The Return, and it concerns this very important issue to the congressman about reentry of former inmates after incarceration. This is an issue that the congressman has been very much at the forefront of. He is the one of the leaders in Congress for a bipartisan push to reform, in general, the nation's criminal justice system. He's the lead sponsor in the House of a bill called the Fair Chance Act. I'm looking forward to talking to him about that when we hear from him. Fair Chance Act is a bicameral bill, so it's got support in both the Senate and the House. And this has to do with fair chance hiring policies. The federal government would make it a requirement for agencies and federal contractors that they would not ask applicants for jobs about their criminal histories until the end of the hiring practice. It, in a lot of ways, kind of mirrors and reflects the Ban the Box legislation that was passed at the Baltimore City Council. Nick Mosby, who's one of the candidates for mayor and is a current city councilman, was a proponent of that bill to basically delay the sharing of information if someone has a felony conviction. It's not that the information is never shared, but it's not shared until the end of the hiring practice rather than the beginning of the hiring practice. So we look forward to talking to Congressman Cummings, who I believe we have on the line. Congressman Cummings, are you there?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for joining us. Congressman Cummings, of course, is the representative of the 7th District here in Maryland. He's been in the House for 20 years. We've got a lot to talk about this morning, Congressman. Yeah. First, your reaction to the president's remarks yesterday on the executive actions concerning gun control.
I was very pleased with the president's actions because I think it's very important that we address this issue. I mean, we are seeing folks gunned down in our streets right in Baltimore, and we have situations like Sandy Hook and the many other tragedies that we've seen, and we need to try to do something about it.
Is there any chance of any movement in Congress, given the strict sort of party line reaction to the president's remarks yesterday? Is there any chance that Congress would move a bill to undergird and further strengthen the executive actions that the president suggested yesterday?
I doubt that will happen. But this is what I do believe. I believe that some of the things that he is doing now, no matter who becomes president, they're not going to change him. because the president is a brilliant young man. He knows that the nation is with him on this. In other words, people are tired of seeing these tragedies and nothing happening to try to address gun control. And so now he's doing what he can do within the Constitution, constitutional limits. And once those things are out there, and those, say, for example, the additional ATF agents in place, the mental illness issues addressed, things of that nature, I don't think the Congress would have the nerve to try to overturn those things. And so I think it's not, I mean, he's not going to be able to accomplish everything he wants to accomplish, but like he said, if you can save one life, then that is, it's all worth it.
Can you explain, or how do you explain, the apparent stranglehold that the NRA has on at least many Republican members of the House?
It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this one out. It's about campaigns, financing. In other words, the NRA has a lot of money and a lot of influence, so they can hit candidates from two angles. One, they can make sure that they don't get funds from the lobby, and the other thing that they can do is that they can blast them over the airwaves and the television stations. As simple as that. And so I think a lot of these folks are afraid of the NRA. And keep in mind, the vast majority of NRA members, you know, the rank and file members, agree with the president. So that tells you that it's obviously the top leadership in the NRA, and of course the gun manufacturers. Several commentators made a point yesterday when they said that every time the president makes these kinds of announcements, the gun sales go up. And so that answers that. I mean, that's exactly how it works.
It's got to be awfully frustrating for you, Congressman. I wonder, do you think you could get more done if you were in the Senate?
You know, that's hard to say. Here in the House, I have a large staff because of the role I play as ranking member of oversight. But still trying to figure that one out. But I want to do whatever will allow me to be most effective in representing my constituents and the people of Maryland and certainly the people of the United States.
Are you thinking about running for the Senate seat that Senator Mikulski is going to vacate?
Of course.
And the filing deadline is the 3rd of February.
I bet
you didn't know that, huh?
I have it circled, believe me.
So that's still in play, then? You're still thinking about it?
My wife reminds me every day.
I bet she does. So you're still thinking about it, then? It's still a possibility.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about the documentary film that you're going to screen tomorrow afternoon at the Capitol Visitor Center. It's called The Return, and it's about this issue of reentry after people have been incarcerated. You are a main sponsor in the House of the Fair Chance Act. Tell folks what that act tries to accomplish and what the status of the bill is at this point.
Sure. The Fair Chance Act is basically, it can also be called ban the box. In other words, a lot of times when people have served their time in prison, or if they have a record, they could have a record and never have served one day, a criminal record, that is. And when they make an application for federal jobs and for most jobs, the first thing they have to do within that first page of the application is you have to say whether you've been convicted of a crime. What this does, this legislation does, is basically says that, you know, you employer goes through the process in federal, with regard to federal jobs and federal contracting jobs, and then at the later stage of the hiring process, then they can ask for a criminal background check with regard to any kind of offenses they may have had. What we're trying to do is give people a chance to at least get their foot in the door. What the statistics show is that if you have any indication on your application that you've been convicted, you're not going to get a call. And 60% of the time, 50% for whites, and 60% for African Americans. So that means you as soon as you make that application, you don't have an opportunity. And by the way, we have, thanks to Councilman Nick Mosby, we have that legislation already in Baltimore City, which is a wonderful thing.
Right. So you're going to be screening this film called The Return. You're going to do that in conjunction with Representative Jim Sensenbrenner, Republican from Wisconsin. Is there bipartisan support for this bill? You introduced it in September.
No,
was referred to subcommittee in November. Where does it sit now?
Well, right now, the bill has passed the... The identical bill has passed the Senate, and we are considering it here in the House, and we expect to be able to get it out. But we have, yes, it is a bipartisan bill, and that's a good thing.
Very quickly, as we finish up, just have about 30 seconds, but here you are talking about a bill asking folks to, treat people with criminal histories with more compassion in the context of people in the Republican presidential field talking about, barring entry to the country for people who haven't committed a crime. In the age of Trump and et al., what's the mood in Congress for a bill that, like this?
I think the mood is pretty good. I think if we all the stars have aligned. And a lot of people, both Republicans and Democrats, are saying, wait a minute, we are basically giving these folks a life sentence, and they're unable to get a job, right in Maryland, there are like 1,000 opportunities that somebody with a record cannot take advantage of. And so basically the person gets locked into a situation where they can't do for their families.
Well, Congressman, I appreciate your time this morning, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much.
Congressman Elijah Cummings represents Maryland's 7th District. He and Representative Jim Sensenbrenner from Wisconsin will be hosting a screening of a film called The Return. It's about reentry after incarceration. That screening's tomorrow night at 5:30 at the U.S. Capitol Visitor Center in Washington. The film will be followed by a panel discussion with the producers. Coming up Friday here on Maryland Morning, more on the president's gun control executive actions with Daniel Webster. He's the director of the Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Policy and Research. And coming up this morning, they're getting cranky at the Creative Alliance. I'll explain all that after the news. Here's Nathan.
Thanks, Tom. You're listening to the Maryland Morning Podcast, a service of your public radio, WYPR, in Baltimore. Find more podcasts at WYPR.org and tell us what you think by email, mdmorning@WYPR.org. Now, back to the podcast.
Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Tom Hall. This weekend, the Creative Alliance in East Baltimore will host the 3rd annual Cranky Fest. Now, no, this is not a meeting of people who are in a bad mood. Traditional crankies are panoramas created on scrolls that are cranked by hand. These panoramas help tell stories that performers sing while the scrolls are being unwound. The creators of Cranky Fest are Anna Roberts-Gavalt and Elizabeth Laprelle. They are old-time music artists who perform traditional old-time music with the crankies that they've created. They've also invited more modern musical artists to get into the cranky groove as well. And on Friday and Saturday nights, artists from across the country and across the musical spectrum will join them at the Creative Alliance. Two of those artists are WYPR's Aaron Henkin and his collaborator on the series Out of the Blocks, Wendell Patrick. Aaron joins me in the studio. How you doing?
Hi, Tom.
So, Aaron, you and Wendell are by no means old-time musicians. And how does one translate a radio series Out of the Blocks into a cranky?
It's a testament to the range that these organizers are willing to take into consideration as they kind of expand this notion of what a cranky is. We've collaborated with a visual artist, a paper artist, Lisa Hillring, who's created a diorama of a city block. Imagine looking down the street, you see the two rows of row houses, and sort of at the vanishing point of this city block, we've created this 2-foot by 2-foot movie screen, and we're going to back project a lot of Wendell's photographs that he's taken of all the people on all these different blocks whose stories we've collected. We're going to play the audio of the stories, and we're going to play live music along with it.
Live music, a radio cranky at the Creative Alliance. Well, last year I spoke with the organizers of Cranky Fest, Anna Roberts-Gavalt and Elizabeth Laprelle. They are young musicians, as I've said, but they've made a specialty of old-time music. I asked them how they define it.
It means a lot of things, but to us, I think it means the music that is still played and was played by people in rural Appalachia. And so sometimes that means gospel music. Sometimes it means ballads that are 400 years old. Sometimes it means fiddle tunes for square dances. And there are many different sub-styles of old-time music, but I think for us, the music we play is mountain music, and it's music from people that we've learned directly from older folks in the mountains, fiddle players and ballad singers, and also from recordings.
Well, as a friend of mine used to say, talking about music is like dancing about architecture.
Exactly.
So let's quit talking. And you guys, Anna, you've brought your guitar, and yep. Elizabeth, you've got your banjo. Mm-hmm. You've been nice enough to do that. So why don't you play us a tune? What do you want to play?
This is Going Across the Mountain, and it's a song about a relative going off to the Civil War.
Going across the mountain, oh, very well. Going across the mountain, hear my banjo tell. Got my rations on my back, my powder it is dry. I'm going across the mountain, Chrissy, don't you cry. I'm going across the mountain to join the boys in blue. When the war is over, I'll come back to you. Across the mountain, if I have to crawl, I'll give old Jeff's men a little of my rifle ball. Oh, way before it's good daylight, if nothing happens to me, oh, I'll be way down yonder in old Tennessee. Expect to miss me when I'm gone, but I'm going through. When the war is over, I'll come back to you. Going across the mountain, oh, very well. Going across the mountain, oh, very well. Going across the mountain, oh, very well. Gone across the mountain, oh, very well.
That's really lovely. Thank you so much. Anna Roberts-Gevalt on guitar, Elizabeth Laprelle on banjo, both on vocals. That's Going Across the Mountain. Example of the old-time music that you guys will be playing tomorrow night at the Creative Alliance. So, Elizabeth, you also involve these things called crankies in your show. So what's a cranky?
Yeah, I first found out about crankies from Anna, and they're a long scroll, either on paper or fabric, which you wind around two sticks, and then you put in a box, and you crank it so that you only see one part of the scroll at a time, and it's got pictures on it, so you crank it while you're singing or telling a story, and the pictures go along with the words.
So like early TV, early
right.
Yeah.
Lo-fi music video.
Cool. Well, let me ask you to do another tune. You also do a lot of a cappella music together.
Yes,
and
indeed,
some fiddle music
do.
And stuff. So here's an a cappella tune you want to do called Long Time Traveling. What can you tell us about this song?
We're really lucky to know a few wonderful folks whose families grew up with played music. So one of those people is Rich Kirby, who's also a radio man down in Whitesburg, Kentucky. And his granny was an amazing ballad singer named Addie Graham. And this is just a little song that she sang.
Been a long time traveling, here below. Been a long time traveling away from my home. Been a long time traveling here below. To lay this body down. Been a long time traveling here below. Been a long time traveling away from my home. Been a long time traveling my home. Been a long time traveling here below to lay this body down.
That's really beautiful. Thank you so much. Long time traveling here in our studios, Anna Roberts-Givault and Elizabeth Laprelle. How do you learn the techniques? How do you learn the songs? Where do you find this stuff? You know, how do you get this show on the road?
Well, it's a great question.
I think, well, for us, it's definitely a mix of recordings and then friends.
Because it's certainly an oral tradition, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
do you,
if you hang out in the right places, in the right spots, and, you know, throughout the Appalachian Trail, you can probably hear a lot of folks still singing this music.
Yeah. Some. Yeah. Elizabeth grew up in rural Retreat, Virginia, and I think was, I'm just going to tell your story, Elizabeth.
Do it.
It's an area where there's a lot of music. So, like, the barber in her town has instruments on his walls and kind of has helped a bunch of people Elizabeth's age kind of connect to the music, and there are fiddlers' conventions all throughout the summer. And so you can kind of, you start to meet the people that you want to learn from. So you hear someone sing at a festival and you kind of follow them around a lot. And and then if you become friends with them, they say, come to my house. And then they'll, sometimes they give you advice, but usually you just hang out and play, or like watch TV shows with them, or eat food, or help them in their garden, or it's kind of a whole experience. Like, you learn some music, but you also learn about the whole picture.
And Elizabeth, it's a growing community of folks doing this kind of music?
Well, I think it ebbs and flows. Mm-hmm. Like the time when this music was like the pop music of the day is long gone, because that went away when the radio came. So, curse you guys. No.
You're not the first. Because this was an entertainment in the days before sort of, you know, media, before broadcast media. Mm-hmm. But it's also the stories themselves get told. I mean, the Civil War, these were stories that were told through these songs. People learned about what was going on. They learned about, you know, certainly the hearts of people who are involved in these things.
Yeah, well, and the people I think who play it now are people who, for one reason or another, are interested in the old way of doing things. And that can take a lot of shapes. You know, some people who like this music really love old tools. And to them, the music is like an artifact. And they just like the way things used to be done. And the music is part of that. Some people like it because it's you know, they feel like it's just fun they can have with their family, you know, just sit around and play with their uncles and their cousins and their
which Elizabeth does
kids. Some people come to it just because really musically it speaks to them and strikes a chord. So, yeah.
So Elizabeth, you're still living in Southwest Virginia, right? And Anna, you're here in Baltimore, right? Is there much of an old-time music community right here in the city?
Yeah, there is. There's a lot of places to hear various forms of folk music. I kind of moved to Baltimore out of an interest of really, I guess, more tying into, I guess, music that is new. I spent a bunch of time living in the country and was learning about music that was kind of an older form of music. And I think Baltimore is a really exciting place to live musically, because there is a lot of interest in cross collaboration, like hanging out with friends who do the Baltimore Boom Bap Society, who are saying, hey, we're curious about what old-time music can bring to this scene. I guess I was interested in what old-time music had to do with the present.
You talked about what brings audiences to it, and, you know, that wonderful scene that we can all conjure in our heads of a family sitting around after dinner, you know, singing tunes just for hours and hours and hours. Is that the kind of, that scene, Elizabeth, is that what drew you to it?
Yeah, well, I did grow up in a musical family, and my family was interested in old music, folk music, music of all kinds, but they really liked music they could make themselves sitting around. So I came up with that growing up, and then in my teens, I really started, like, artistically, it started to speak to me in a huge way.
Mm-hmm.
And became something I really wanted to
follow.
And
it's interesting when you share this, like tomorrow night, you share this in a concert format. Mm-hmm. A lot of this music doesn't have really a concert profile. It has, it's a much more intimate, like in the room kind of profile.
Totally. So well, we think Cranky's helps that's why, with that.
Yeah. I think when we first met and were talking, we were talking about ways to explore, like to get an audience to get into the stories as much as we both are into the story part. And I think some bands do this by creating these really lush, like, arrangements of a song or a ballad to
lots help, of instrumentation,
to help show the arc. And for us, we want to just keep the singing simple and then to get the audience into the story by giving them something to look at or to say, oh, right, that's the Turkish lady. Mm-hmm. That's just this character.
Bring you into the world, the imaginative world that the songs are creating. From on high, you better get your house in order.
Anna Roberts-Gevalt and Elizabeth Leprell. We spoke last year before the second Baltimore Cranky Fest. The third edition of this annual event takes place on Friday and Saturday nights at the Creative Alliance in Baltimore. Concerts are sold out, but if you're interested in going, come to our website for a link to more information and to see if tickets become available. WYPR.org/Maryland Morning, where you can also find a link to Aaron Henkin and Wendell Patrick's terrific series, Out of the Blocks. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Coming up after the news, get your geek on. The latest from Vegas at the Consumer Electronics Show.
I see the train with the engine and one small baggage car. Your idle thoughts, wicked deeds, will stop at the judgment bar. There's a little back train to come in, fix all your business right. There's a little back train to come in, and it could be here tonight. Poor young man in darkness cares not for the gospel light, till suddenly hears a whistle blow and a little black train in sight. Oh Lord, won't you please spare me? I see my wicked plight. Have mercy, Lord.
Is there an issue that you'd like to see us cover? Let us know. You can email us at mdmorning@wypr.org, or you can leave us a voicemail. Just call 410-881-3162. Visit us on the web to leave comments or to hear previous episodes. That's all at wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Now, on with the show.
I'm Tom Hall. Welcome back. If you're a tech nerd, chances are you need not be told that today marks the beginning of the International Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. More than 3,000 companies from around the globe have set up shop to show off their latest gadgets and gizmos. But these days, CES goes far beyond being a gadget show. It's also a major showcase for electric and self-driving cars, video-equipped drones and robotic equipment, security systems, and wearable fashion tech like smart shoes. If you have no idea what smart shoes are, join the club and listen up. Mark Saltzman is a syndicated journalist who writes about all things tech. He hosts Tech Talk on CJAD Radio in Montreal, and he joins me from the Consumer Electronics Show bright and early in Las Vegas. Morning, Mark.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So I got to start with smart shoes. What are those?
Well, as the name suggests, they are wirelessly connected shoes that send information to a nearby app. So what they'll do is they'll calculate your, it's kind of like having a Fitbit in your shoe, if you will. So it calculates things like your distance traveled, your estimated calories burned, how many steps you've taken or stairs. It's got the ability to, you know, detect if you've gone up and down stairs, which is a different metric altogether. And then some of them can actually self-tie themselves, just like Marty McFly in Back to the Future. So,
self-tying,
you know, there's a few
shoes.
Different companies here.
Is there one particular category that is sort of stepping up this year that hasn't stepped up in the past?
So in terms of technology that has debuted in the past, but it, coming into their own, I would say 4K. So this refers to this next generation of video that has four times the resolution of HD. So instead of 2 million little dots or pixels that make up the image, it's more than 8 million. So there's a lot of new TVs here that have 4K with high dynamic range, which adds even more visual, you know, sort of integrity to the picture. So like better color and contrast and brightness, more ways to capture 4K and more 4K content, which is really important. So I'm at the Sony booth right now, and they've got a new TV called the X930D, which is just jaw-dropping. So this has all of those features, including Android operating system. There's a AX53 4K handy cam. So if you are a hockey mom or a soccer dad, you can capture all the content from the bleachers with 20 times optical zoom with 4K quality. So you play it back on a TV. It looks lifelike. It's four times better resolution than HD. So I would say 4K in terms of technology that has debuted in the past, Tom, but it's really going to come into its own in 2016 for your listeners. The next TV that they buy will be 4K in all likelihood, and, you know, a lot more content on Netflix and Hulu and other places in 4K.
Interesting. And the car companies are really stepping up. It used to be the car companies unveiled all their new stuff at auto shows. Now it seems that they do it at consumer electronics shows.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's a big trend that we've seen over the last couple of years. And even though the Detroit Auto Show is around the corner, all the big car companies are here showing off their self-driving cars, the safety assists, you know, using technology like sensors and radar and cameras. And they've got more CarPlay, which is the ability to connect your iPhone in the car or Android device, and even built-in Wi-Fi hotspots. So all the car companies are here showing off this or alternative fuel. You know, it's amazing. Ford was showing off their Sync 3 next-generation infotainment system that works with a number of apps in and outside of the vehicle. So, like, you can open up an app on your phone, and because it's a connected car, you can see things like mileage. You can see things like, you know, you can do remote start, remote lock, all that. That's all becoming standard with a lot of these vehicles. So there's a lot of that here at CES, for sure.
We heard a report this morning in NPR that Ford is actually starting to think of itself not so much as a car company, but as a mobility company. So they're really even sort of rebranding themselves. And thinking,
interesting.
You know, that is interesting.
Yeah, they've had a number of announcements this week.
Yeah, and virtual reality, of course, continues to be big. There's this product called Oculus, which I guess is owned by Facebook. And I guess virtual reality is becoming something that's much more common than it was just a few years ago.
Sure. It's still reserved mostly for early adopters, you know, gamers like myself. Oculus Rift is going to be starting its pre-orders today. HTC Vive is here at the show, which is a virtual reality headset coming in April that also has a front-facing camera. So you can, you know, grab your drink while you're playing a 360-degree game and see what you're doing. Plus, it comes with these controllers that you actually let you manipulate virtual content. So you, it's kind of like gloves, if you will, but you hold these things and you can actually touch and manipulate the stuff you see in your eyewear, which is pretty wild stuff. Samsung Gear VR is doing really well right now. That's the only major player that debuted just before Christmas. It's $100, and it works with a Samsung phone, one of the four sort of compatible phones. So VR is becoming very hot for early adopters. And speaking of Samsung, I've got in front of me here this Galaxy Tab Pro S. This is the world's thinnest Windows. Basically, it's a tablet, but it comes with a keyboard and a trackpad that magnetically connects to it. It's thinner than an iPad Pro, and it's thinner than a Microsoft Surface. It's only a quarter of an inch thin. Yet it is a full Windows 10 device from Samsung that is amazing for both your 9-to-5 life and your 5-to-9 downtime. you know, for first when you need the keyboard and then when you want to use your fingertip on the touchscreen.
And it all just gets smaller and thinner and you know, just more compact. What about affordability, yeah, though? Does it get cheaper, I mean, as these things develop?
Technology as a whole does get more affordable over time. We were talking about the connected car earlier. You know, these automakers aren't just putting in that tech in their high-end vehicles. They're trickling down to even their sub-$10,000 cars, you know, that have Wi-Fi and CarPlay and Android Auto support. So that's the good thing about technology. A 4K TV that might have cost $5,000 a couple of years ago is now, you know, $1,900. So that's the great thing about tech. Now, CES is, you know, a bit of a different animal because it's a window to the future of technology. So there's not often prices associated with it just yet. You know, some of it is more, you know, just to show that it can be done. There's a very funky USB drive here that is from a company called LaCie. They're now owned by Seagate, and it's called the Chrome A, and it looks like a piece of art. It was designed, in fact, by Neil Poulton, and it is the world's fastest USB drive. So I don't know how much this is going to cost, but it's gorgeous, and it delivers the fastest speeds possible, a 4K video, a two-hour 4K video in under a minute, which is that's just leaps and bounds above what, you know, USB drives can do today.
Sure. And of course, we all just get more and more used to, you know, the ease of this and the speed of this. I mean, I wonder, is there any end in sight? I mean, with a 4K TV, for example, you know, last year it was 2 million bits and now it's 8 million bits. Is next year there going to be a 16 million bit television out there?
Yeah. So 8K TVs, there are a couple here on the show floor. But it's still early days. It's just a showpiece. It'll never come out over the next few years. And, you know, where's the content as well? There's no point in investing in that kind of a television when there's nothing you can watch on it. But definitely 4K is the next big thing in TV because of the content that's readily available. You can even create your own 4K content, like I mentioned with that Handycam. So, you know, and some smartphones can even shoot 4K now. Not, you don't get the optical zoom, of course, but the stuff is mind-blowing.
It is indeed. And Mark, we appreciate your giving us a little time from the floor of the CES, and have a great time at the convention this year. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Tom. Appreciate it as well.
Mark Saltzman is a syndicated journalist and radio host who has written for a slew of major news and technology publications. He's written dozens of technology books, too, including the Apple Watch for Dummies. He joined us from the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. We've got links to more information on our website, wipr.org/Maryland Morning. That's it for us today. Coming up Friday, more on President Obama's executive actions on gun control with the director of the Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Policy and Research. And the movie mavens, Jed Dietz and Ann Hornaday, share their picks of flicks. I'm Tom Hall. We'll see you Friday. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
He got 13 channels of wrestling coming in strong from a satellite send. 200 function remote.